You're tuning into the Real Estate Diversification Podcast, hosted by trusted and experienced real estate attorneys who are also seasoned real estate investors themselves. Are you ready to explore unique real estate investing opportunities? Ready to learn about emerging trends and new ideas? Your hosts will help you understand the practical and legal complexities of a myriad of real estate investments so that you can maximize your potential and achieve financial freedom. Now, listen in and get ready to learn.
Get ready to learn.
Welcome back, Red Podcast Nation. Ferd Neiman here again today with another episode. Today, I'm with my colleague, Hunter Woodhart. We're going to cover RV parks and campgrounds. Hunter, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks. How are you today?
Nate, doing all right. All right. Well, we've done this on a couple other episodes. We're going to continue with this, another kind of alternative investment option for real estate diversification, RV parks. We do a lot of work on these at our law firm. Also, I have some experience with RV parks that are in my mobile home parks and RVs, and there's some similarities to mobile home parks, some differences. So we'll cover kind of just a general overview and then some pros and cons, maybe with some distinguishing features from other investments. So Hunter, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what is an RV park and a campground?
Yeah. RV parks, campgrounds are oftentimes, really, they're just a big parking lot, but said a little bit more, they're going to be these outdoor recreational facilities providing a camping space or a lot for an RV or a camper or a van even to come in and park in for the night and connect to utilities. So you'll have, you know, water, sewer, electricity, and then oftentimes RVs will have, you know, additional amenities. So laundry mats for, you know, people who are traveling a lot and on the road, on the go. You'll have a lot, you know, picnics, outdoor grills. You can check out our episode with Jonathan Gilmore on glamping for some more, you know, really luxurious features that can be in some of these. But for your standard RV, you know, bathroom facilities, laundry, some picnic tables, grills, maybe a liquor store or some kind of convenience store on the site. But those are going to be your pretty standard amenities. And they'll oftentimes be, as we'll get into later, with it, you know, being a lot of these being location dependent. Most RV parks are going to be near, you know, walking trails, biking trails, big lakes for swimming, boating, other water, you know, recreational sports, fishing. So might have hunting nearby. So oftentimes you're going to have outdoor activities and attractions drawing people to the park and or the campground as well.
No, good points. And we see an array and a range of RV parks and campgrounds. Some of them are more, as you described, that are, I think are kind of tourist based or seasonal. And you'll have, you know, even lots of games and amenities from horseshoes or bocce ball or shuffleboard. And you'll generally have a pool or a fishing dock, sometimes a lake where you can rent a boat. Sometimes these are paired with marinas, and sometimes a lot of RV parks have kind of a lake feature or a wooded area for just kind of being in the outdoors. And then you've got some other more bare bones RV parks that are often for full-time living. And those would be more similar to mobile home parks. Sometimes people will actually build decks, will skirt their homes, and generally you skirt it to show permanence. And then if in warmer weather climates, you know, like I live here in Kansas City, Missouri, it gets cold in the winter. So you want to put skirting underneath your RV. Otherwise your water pipes or your sewer pipes are going to freeze. So typically a full-time RV park would be more often be for people to stay there year round or for years and years and years. And, you know, that's the kind I'm more familiar with investing in, is more permanent housing. And it's generally another form of affordable housing, where some of your touristy campgrounds and RV parks are going to be more high revenue plays. I'll talk more about revenue, but ultimately one of the things that makes this a good market to invest in or good asset class is it's just kind of a niche product. It's still kind of fragmented, meaning the original owners, Ma and Pa, generally still own it, right? So they're not often professional operators. They don't have 5, 10, 50 of these. So smaller players like me or you can still compete. We can compete to find a deal. We can compete to build rapport with Ma and Pa to get them to sell to us. We can buy off market. And it's generally just a strong asset class because it's not as attractive to the big players yet, because they haven't figured out as good a way to scale it. Now, some of that consolidation may be coming, but it hasn't been as easy for some of the players to scale. Now, there are some people that own, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of RV sites. So it's not that there's nobody scaling it, not that you couldn't do it either, but generally there's a lot of one-time or two-time property owners. So that just gives you an opportunity to get in at competitive pricing. Another key benefit to RV parks is it typically will have a lower operating expense ratio. You're still going to have your regular operating expenses like management, insurance, property taxes, some utilities or trash service, you know, groundskeeping, CapEx, if you have to maintain the roads or the infrastructure. But you have that in, you know, multifamily, for example. But in, unlike multifamily or single family, you don't, if you just own the land and you're a land lease community, basically a bunch of individual ground leases, perhaps month to month with either residents or tourists, and perhaps even daily or nightly, you don't have the water heater. You don't have the same amount of toilets. You don't have the roof. You don't have the structure. So, and generally you may not need as much as intensive of management or maintenance personnel. So your management costs and your staffing costs are going to be less, because if I own the land and John Smith is bringing his RV in for the weekend and his RV has a window break or a toilet leak, not really my issue. If his roof leaks, not really my issue. If a tree falls on his RV, not even really my insurance claim or my insurance rates to go up. So lower operating costs are one of the key benefits to this asset class. Now, sometimes RV parks will have site-built buildings like a community center or a clubhouse. You know, pool would obviously have some maintenance. So it's not zero maintenance, but there's also, there are, I think it's called rvcouples.com or similar sites that have, we actually just hired a couple for a mobile home park on the same type of site where, a couple is, you know, she's a manager, he's a maintenance guy, and they travel together. And you can even get people who will come and just be a campsite worker. Now, you got to look at some of the legal issues with that, like as far as liability and, you know, payroll taxes, things like that. But people that just like moving around the country, and they'll exchange services for rent. You know, somebody, I'll take out the trash, let me park for free. I'll clean the pool, let me park for free. I'll mow the grounds, let me park for free and pay me $100 or provide the mower. So lower operating costs would be a key pro. That can lead to higher cash flow, right? Generally, cash flow is revenue minus expenses equals net operating income. If you have debt, then you have debt service. After debt service, free cash flow. If you have investors like limited partners in there or other types of, you know, debt or equity structure payments, then maybe that comes in the middle there as well. But they can generate high cash flow. And part of it is the pricing that you can charge, in particular on seasonal parks. A typical RV park may charge $300 a month to park your RV there or your camper all month. But if you have a touristy site, you may charge $100 a week. You may charge $75 a weekend or $50 a night. Well, then you have more, you know, dollars per day. If you have the occupancy. So that's another positive, be high cash flow. And then a lot of times you have potential for value add. I mean, Hunter mentioned some of the amenities. I mean, I almost bought an RV park, ended up not buying it for a couple of reasons, but I ended up almost bought one here in Kansas City Market, and it didn't have any frills. I mean, they didn't even have paved streets. It was just gravel road. There was no grass. They just put gravel in the yards. It was very bare bones, very low income housing. I could have very quickly added decorative fences and rose bushes. I could have added a playground. I could have added a dog park. I could have added sidewalks. I probably could have charged for, you know, put in soda machines, things like that. Some RV parks will lease out golf carts. They'll have putt-putt. They will have, you know, paddle boats. They'll sell bait and tackle. And some of them will have an all-out campground store. I went on a hiking trip with some friends last summer. And we didn't stay in an RV. A lot of people had RVs. We ended up staying in one of the cabins. I didn't own an RV, so I didn't have an RV to bring. We stayed in a little cabin. We had our own bathroom. Some of them don't. We had our own bathroom, but we didn't have our own shower. So we could go to the bathroom there, but we had to go shower, and we didn't have a kitchen. We grilled outside. But they had a campground store. Well, guess what? We were not very price sensitive when we went to buy, you know, marshmallows, when we went to buy, you know, lighter fluid, when we went to buy charcoal, suntan lotion. I hiked 16 miles in steel toe work boots, which is a bad idea. And I was not a grand hiker. So I had blisters, right? So I had to go buy Band-Aids and blister cream. I don't know what that stuff's supposed to cost, but I'm sure I paid 3x, right? It was the only place within, you know, the the regular world of IT. There was no, you know, some places charge Wi-Fi. This place didn't have Wi-Fi. This place barely had electricity. So I didn't really care what I was paying for Band-Aids. So there's a potential for high, for value add and increased revenue sources, upgrading the amenities. You can, sometimes you can add units. Some places, like this place I was at, had a, like a little amphitheater, and they would have live music and bands. Well, they can charge an extra $10 to go to the band. Sometimes they'll have food trucks that they get a piece by. Sometimes they'll sell beer. So that's the value add. One of the other pros would be just minimal competition in the asset class. Like I said, this is really fragmented still. So that generally leads to more attractive investment opportunities. And then, you know, there's minimal CapEx, you know, capital costs. You got to, you know, you could maybe get a seller finance deal, so it's less down payment. A lot of these RV parks were hard to finance back in the day, and mom and pa built them, and they did, and or they bought them and they had to sell or finance. So they're willing to sell or finance. Sometimes you can get in for as little as zero down, or maybe 5% down instead of a standard loan. And then just, you may not need roads. You may have just gravel roads. You may not need a clubhouse or a pool. Depends on the park. We have a, it's a really, we call it a mobile home park, but it's really RV/mobile home park in Central Illinois. And it's beautiful. You know, it's got a pond and a fishing dock and a clubhouse. We put in a playground, a dog park. We ended up repaving the streets because they were super rough. But it's a hilly, wooded neighborhood, and people want to live there. People want to go visit there, you know, one or the other. So there's just numerous revenue opportunities as well. Pool pass, you can charge extra for that. Laundry, vending machines, sometimes restaurants. I think I mentioned most of them. Some people rent out, like, I've never done this, but Jeeps or dune buggies or four wheelers. The lawyer in me gets a little nervous about renting four wheelers by the day. Some places have nearby other social events that they can get coupons for or get some sort of kickback. Like if there's a brewery nearby or a zoo or wildlife rescue, I've gone camping before, and part of the reason we chose this location was it was for a float trip. Like you can rent a canoe and float down the river, right? It was very low cost, you know, seemed low cost, you know, whatever it was, $75 for the day. And you had all day at this place, but there were 80 of us, right? So they made a lot of money on, we really only took up, I don't know, an acre of dirt. So add on things like event rentals. And then one of the big ones is yield management. And that's the kind of daily pricing, or, you know, the self-storage business and the hotel business are better in general at dynamic pricing. The airline business, you know, if you go look at a flight and there's only one seat left, guess what? It's probably more expensive than it was yesterday. So you can do some of that. That would typically be a more sophisticated RV park operation or camping operation where you'd have, you know, booking software, dynamic website. Then it becomes more management intensive. More in the hospitality game as well as the real estate game. But those are the key pros as I see them. Hunter, do you agree with all those, or you're going to poke some holes in?
I mean, some of them, you know, agree with, some of them definitely, I think, have some at least fair arguments on the other side. So, you know, you can kind of increase the cash flow, and you mentioned, you know, adding in, you know, like, you know, add in value. But the problem with a lot of these can be it's difficult, especially if you're buying an RV or a campground that isn't already equipped with these and isn't in an area that is allowing development of these parks because of zoning. Zoning will oftentimes be a very large hurdle in for an RV or a campground. And due to the seasonality of, you know, some parks or some cities will want it less than 6 months, or, you know, so you can do month to month up to six consecutive months in a year. Some want them at a minimum of 6 months, so they want them more on this permanent kind of affordable housing basis. You can see them come in with, you know, FEMA after a natural disaster in some areas, and they can come in with some FEMA housing. But as for, you know, the investment purposes of getting a, you know, one for a cash flow, it's very location dependent. It's going to depend on where you're at. What are the attractions, you know, nearby? So, you know, like you said, you can oftentimes partner with, you know, a local brewery that may be near, or a zoo, or a venue that has, you know, concerts and different shows, but you're dependent on those being nearby. So if if there's nothing near the property, then you're going to need to create some demand almost and create some of this attraction to draw people in. Otherwise, you know, you might get by on subscription based, kind of like the franchise ones on, you know, KOA or like the Jelly Homes. Jelly Stone.
That's a good point. I forgot to mention that, or you, one of us did in the intro, but yeah, there is a hybrid model to get involved in the RV business. Instead of owning it directly, you can do a franchise, and then you have people that are more regularly coming. Then there's restrictions and things like that, and a certain amenity level that people expect, but you can have, you know, more customers. Because you bring up a good point. I looked at, this was, I think, before you were here, but I was under contract on a RV park in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and it was kind of a touristy area. It had a pool, it had a lake, had a nice clubhouse.
Hot Springs, Arkansas, or
Hot Springs, Arkansas. Yeah.
Okay.
We ended up not buying the deal because it had private utilities. So that's, you know, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, or maybe not just middle of nowhere, but in this case, it was, we had a treatment plant. Well, it was like $350,000 that failed. So that wasn't in the budget. Right. But that was an area where people were coming for tourism purposes. So a city like that, you bring up a good point with zoning, is some cities want short-term rentals because people come in town, they spend money at the restaurants, and they get out of town. Some places don't want that because they think it's a bunch of troublesome drifters passing through town, causing problems, committing crime. So some cities only allow what they deem permanent housing, and they want you to tie down for at least 6 months. Some are like every month you got to pick up and pull out, you know. And
yeah, it can really throw a wrench into. And to, you know, the other side, you can look at kind of increasing the price and doing some of these more week to week rentals if it's permitted. But if you can only have it, you know, up to a 6 month in a year, consecutive months in a year, then it can throw in a wrench on having a nice consistent cash flow, because you're always having to find someone else to come in and fill. So, you know, if it's up to 6 months, you'll have to find two people. If that's even allowing, or, you know, assuming the park is allowed to be open year round, sometimes the parks themselves have to be closed from, you know, Labor Day to Memorial Day, basically. So you're only operating 6 months of the year. And if that's the case, then that's fine. But, you know, let's say you're only allowed 90 days, you're going to need to find someone to cover those 290 days, or if you do weeks, it creates these gaps where it's, you know, potential lost revenue because someone wasn't in there. So not a new challenge. I mean, same challenge that you'll have with any apartment or any, you know, any housing, but it is more here. And especially with the mobility, people are coming, people are going more frequently than other housing situations. So it's a risk that is more applicable here. Going on to the,
I think what's an important distinction for our listeners to keep in mind is, what's the goal of the RV park? Is it, if it's going to be seasonal, then you can't budget for 12 months of revenue, right? It's probably impractical to have 6 months and 6 months. Some of them, the city wants to shut it down for the winter. Sometimes the business owner just does. So that's where some of these campground staff will travel. Those people come into play because you don't want to keep them on the payroll year round, because it just doesn't make economic sense. So just got to kind of, you know, keep that in mind. And that's also part of why sometimes you want to do the seller finance, because it's hard to get a bank loan sometimes on a business that's, if it's a seasonal business, it's harder to get a bank loan on. And the park that I was under LOI on in Independence, Missouri, that was part of the challenge, was the price they wanted. I can't remember the price, $1.6 million. Well, the bank was only going to give you credit for like 55 cents on the dollar of income, because they didn't want to count the RV income, because they said they could move out. So all of a sudden the loan to value was really low, and it made the yield on equity really low, and it had to raise a lot more equity. So that, you know, financing and seller finance has its pros, but sometimes it has its con, and that it's necessary based on the nature of the park. And not that you have to buy real estate with debt, but, you know, that's one of the benefits of buying real estate. If you do it properly with positive arbitrage, you can have leverage, and you don't have to, I didn't need $1.6 million to buy $1.6 million property. I thought I only needed 400,000. Well, according to the bank, I needed 600,000 or 700,000. Well, it's going to have the same income, but it's going to require 50% more capital. It didn't make as much sense, and I couldn't get up to that price, and I didn't buy it for that particular reason.
That actually leads me into the next point of seller financing can be a con. So it's nice, especially if you can get a really good deal that's better than a traditional the terms of a traditional loan. But this is oftentimes you're doing seller financing because traditional financing don't, lenders, they don't want to touch this oftentimes. And so it can make it hard to scale the business for the reasons that, you've just mentioned. And without having access to that additional capital that obviously the bulk of investors are going to use for leverage, it does throw in a wrench and make it a little bit more difficult because you're going to need to come in with your own money or really work out some favorable terms to get a lower down payment. But the lack of leverage can make it difficult to scale. And so that's kind of a con on the side of the seller financing. Going into the management as well, the point you had made kind of at the end was with RVs, you're going to enter the hospitality industry as well. So you're not just in the housing and the real estate, but your hospitality, especially, going back to that seasonality and location dependence. If you're near lakes, if you're near, with marinas or boats or hiking trails or RVs, maybe, or not RVs, ATVs and four wheelers, different off-roads, dune buggies, things like that, it creates this additional hurdle for management. Liability gets thrown in there. It can throw in some additional costs to the expense. So what was thought of a really, really low CapEx or a really low operating cost business is now costing you a little bit more in expenses than you initially budgeted for. So the management, you just want to make sure you get a good team, someone who can do the hospitality. This is going to be more frequent, a lot of people in, a lot more people out oftentimes, unless, of course, we're speaking of it being a more permanent, affordable home or housing situation. But for these seasonal ones, it's a lot more in and out. And so it's going to be a lot of reputation built, and you don't want to, have staff that scare off people or don't make them feel welcome. They're not going to want to come then. And then the last point, I guess, is it's hard to see. So we'll see in the coming years, but it's really just, is this RV tourism a fad? And not necessarily a fad. I mean, RV's been on the rise, but we saw a significant jump in 2021, 2022. We saw people that they went fully remote. And so then, they sold their house or they started moving, they bought an RV and just started traveling and, pull in somewhere and work for the day and then, get on the road for another couple hours. And this shift of remote and hybrid is starting to tilt back in favor of in the office. And so most employers, if not all, and the most major metropolises are requiring at least some time back in the office or part-time per week. So, for some of these people that may have sold their house a year ago, they're going to have to come back. And, will we see a bunch of sale of RVs? Will in the next year or two, or will it kind of die out with the sense of the bulk people who were, kind of jumping on the bandwagon or enjoying the trend? So we'll see. Maybe not. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, you're right that, the work from home movement or the remote movement put some jet fuel on the RV industry the last couple of years, and some of that's starting to pull back. But I heard a statistic at one point, and I don't have my source, so don't quote me on it, but that there were more RVs sold in 2021 than there are vacant RV spaces in the country. So there's not even enough spaces to house all these. So people obviously are keeping them. My neighbor across the street has one. He lives across the street in a site-built house, but he has an RV. So he doesn't use a space every weekend or every month, or I don't know how often he uses it. If he wanted to use it, there's not enough room if him and everybody else did. So that means there's been a lot of new traffic. People have kind of realized, COVID forced a lot of people to get outside. You know, there were not as many restaurants and bars, and people realized, like, I kind of like the outdoors. I kind of like outdoor cooking. That's one of the things the RV industry has figured out, is people like just sitting outside. And there's an RV park about an hour from my house. I was up in there with my family 3 weeks ago or so. And it's just like people everywhere. It's like community, you know, as far as like, hey, I'm going to grill outside, walk next door, make a friend, or hey, see you next weekend. Let's park on this end and we'll, you know, make friends. So the RV lifestyle has really grown in a lot of popularity, and you see some empty nesters do it. You see some people that are, you know, even young people that are just traveling around the country with a remote job. So I do think it's got a lot of steam behind it still. So I'm still pretty bullish on the RV industry. As far as the management challenges, I agree that there are challenges with scaling it, because it's so customer service driven and hospitality driven. Like our park there in Central Illinois, we have, I think we got about 45 mobile homes in that community and then about 5 RVs right now. And we have new RVs come in, but I told our manager, I don't want nightly or weekly, because the problem is with the nightly or weekly is they don't want to put the utilities in their name. So we end up paying, we have to include water, sewer, trash, electric, gas as part of the cost. Well, then we need to charge more. Well, that market doesn't support, you know, $100 a night, you know, and the mobile home sites are $290 a month. So people don't want to spend even $100 for the weekend. So we've been telling people it's a 1 month minimum. And then we add in, instead of $290, we add another $100 because their utilities are quote free, as opposed to the mobile home sites. They get utilities in their own name. They get a lease. So that's one of the, so as a result, we turn away a lot of RVs because we were trying it when it was a week at a time or a weekend at a time. And they want to pay, you know, $25 or $30 the weekend. It's like, it doesn't make sense for us because you still got to, and you have to, you know, we have certain lots that are identified because mobile homes are typically 100 amp or 200 amp electrical hookups. RVs are typically 30 or 50. And then RVs has a kind of a flexible pipe sewer that goes into their into the ground, and RVs are often not skirted. So if it gets to be colder weather, you need to make sure you got that heat tape on the sewer line and the water line. And if it's not skirted, some cities get mad at you. So if it's a hybrid mobile home RV park, it's more of a challenge, and I'd recommend running the RVs like mobile homes. Just say 1 month minimum, and you got to pay up front. And we even moved to 2 month minimum at one point, just because, like, we don't want to deal with the transiency, because those communities are designed to be mobile home parks. They just allow RVs. RVs fit well because they're shorter. They fit in old mobile home parks if you can get the zoning approvals, because new mobile homes are generally 60 to 76 feet in length. Old mobile homes were 40 to 56. Well, some of these sites, the individual pad sites, can only handle a 45 or 50 foot home. Well, then the RV makes a lot of sense. We've done that a couple times, you know, sneak an RV in there because it's 40 feet long and the mobile home won't fit. But overall, RV parks and campgrounds, I think, have a lot of good features, a lot of good runway. I've invested in them. I'd be open to investing in more, but at this point in my life, I'm probably going to do limited partner in other people's RV parks, as opposed to run them, because it slows down other operations, unless you can find them local. And the ones in the premier areas, I've got a couple acquaintances that own them in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, for example. Well, there's a ton of tourism in Pigeon Forge, Dolly Parton land and all that stuff. Well, then they're booked all the dang time. But, you know, in more rural areas, or, you know, Branson, Missouri, for example, is a big tourist spot. It's got a ton of RV parks, you know, and a ton of demand. Versus Ozarks in Missouri, the RV parks are more, you know, bottom of the barrel housing. And there are some that I'm sure are nicer, but it's the ones I've seen, bottom of the barrel housing, where it's like, where can I live for $125 a month? Only there. It's like, well, that's hard to scale on that model. It's hard to be profitable on that model. So you either need to have a premier area or make them more permanent, is kind of my opinion. But Hunter, what else are we missing, man? Any other pros or cons or general tidbits on RV parks or campgrounds?
I think we've covered everything that I wanted to. I agree with what you just said on there on the end, either make it a permanent basis or probably just treat it like a mobile home park and do month to month, plan for that. But otherwise, yeah.
All right, man. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, God bless, invest wisely.
Thanks for listening to the Real Estate Diversification Podcast. Did you enjoy the episode? Visit www.rediversification.com to tune in to more exciting episodes and free information and tools that will help you succeed. Leave us a review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and our other social media channels at the RED Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Missouri Bar Advertising Disclosure. Neither the Supreme Court of Missouri nor the Missouri Bar reviews nor approves certifying organizations or specialist designations. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.